Well, I guess it works better when you turn on the mic, huh? Hi, folks. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Now, we've got something special this evening. The something special that we've got for you this evening happens to be a rebroadcast of my interview with Paula Harris. Now, the reason we're doing that is because I am, though I know I don't look like it, very much under the weather this evening. And so what we will do is present this encore presentation. It's a hot show. I think it's one that you will really enjoy. It is a show where Paula Harris talks about her new book, but also she talks in that context about Colonel Philip Corso and Dr. Michael Wolfe, two very interesting and very controversial sort of people and within the UFO field. And during the show, a caller calls in and says that he is Dr. Michael Wolfe's brother, and says some things about Dr. Wolfe that are pretty interesting, and yet there seems to be corroboration for Dr. Michael Wolfe's story, even though his brother says it's not true. Anyway, made for some interesting moments, and we'll play that for you here in just a little bit. Let me also remind you that if you've not yet joined the Kevin Smith Show members area, you need to do that, because that's where all of the archives are. Every once in a while, I get an email from someone that is new to the show, and they say, well, yeah, where's the archives? Well, we have them, and it's in the members area, so you need to join. It's only $6.95 for a month. It's cheaper if you pay by the year, but it's $6.95 a month. And then you have access to the archives, okay? And now a lot of other shows, you have to pay just to listen. I mean, even to the live shows, you have to pay to listen to the live shows, but not here, okay? You get the live shows free. We do have some kind of a software glitch with the software that converts the latest show into audio. We don't have any problem at all with the software that converts and uploads the video. So you can always watch the latest show. But we are having a problem with that software that does the audio. Don't really know why. We've reinstalled it a couple of times. It just decided it's not going to work with that computer, I guess. But anyway, we're working on that. Meanwhile, you can always catch the latest show as Watch Latest Show. All right, we have to step away now in just a moment. We've got to step away for a break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Paula Harris. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is someone that is truly a heavy hitter in the world of UFO investigation and research, Paula Harris. Paula is a photojournalist and an investigative reporter kind of focused and specializing on UFO investigations. She is a widely published freelance writer, especially in Europe. She was a friend of Colonel Philip Corso and was instrumental in helping to get his book, The Day After Roswell, translated into Italian. And it is a great pleasure to welcome you, Paula, to the show. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Paula, you've got a new book out. It is called Exopolitics, All the Above.
Yeah, it's a brand new book. It's the second book of Exopolitics that I've written, and the title has to do with the fact that everybody's always asking me if, this phenomenon is interplanetary or it's interdimensional, and I always say all of the above.
Okay, all of the above. All right, now... Paula, when we talk about exopolitics, what are we talking about here?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question because, for me, exopolitics is kind of an extension of ufology. The formal definition that I use, it's the study of the extraterrestrial presence on Earth and its sociological as well as political implications for humanity. So exopolitics came about from the book that was written by Alfred Weber years ago, and Dr. Michael Sala and I have since written books about it. And the real focus of exopolitics is we know for a fact that the UFO phenomenon is real. We know we're being visited by several civilizations. Now, what do you want to do about it? Do you want to wait until it becomes more evident? Or do you want to put something in place because it's going to affect the whole planet politically and sociologically? So it's really an academic study of ufology.
All right. Now, when we talk about exopolitics, we're talking about, I was thinking about this today. It at some point will become, it will encompass diplomatic relations between Earth and extraterrestrial races. But at this point, we're sort of on the front end of everything, and it's sort of, if I understand it correctly, sort of trying to get people to get the structures in place so that can happen.
Yes. You're absolutely right about that. You know, Whitley Strieber wrote an excellent essay. It's on my website. It's called The Elephant is Standing in the Living Room. And it's about not waiting until all this happens before you put these structures in place.
All right. Now, what are some of the structures that have to be put in place?
Well, one thing is that it's very interesting because I was at the X conference this past weekend with Dr. Edgar Mitchell. I don't know if you know that he made a statement, and CNN captured it, and where Edgar Mitchell at the Washington Press Club said that we are being visited by extraterrestrial civilizations, that Roswell was real, and he also said that we need to come together as a planet to address this. When he talked to us individually at the X conference, he said, look, when this happens about 50 years from now, you can't say, when you're asked by the ETs, you know, where you come from, you cannot say, I come from South Carolina. You've got to be able to represent this planet as a species. In other words, there's got to be a political structure that, like a super United Nations, but a supra United Nations, not the one we have now, that represents the entire planet. It cannot be that whatever representation goes out there is just a single country. So that's one of the things that needs to go in place. Maybe somebody at the United Nations should be talking about this.
Okay. Yes, as a matter of fact, I'm aware of his statements. He made those same statements right here on this show last year. And I asked him, he had made those similar statements on a radio show in the U.K., And the news of that was raging around the world. And then I had him on the show, and I asked him, I said, why is it that, I mean, you've been saying these same things now for 10 years, but now, all of a sudden, it's big news. And I can't remember his exact words, so I'll paraphrase. His response was something like, beats me. You know.
One of the reasons about is I think anything that comes out of the of Europe or out of away from the United States, is big news. In other words, the United States is kind of a little bit closed on this subject. We're still ridiculing it. They're still laughing at it. In fact, until recently, the Washington Post was ridiculing our meeting in Washington. We're very lucky because the Washington Post this past April wrote an incredibly intelligent article on the meeting, on the exopolitical meeting with Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And one of the reasons it wrote the article was because we had at the Washington Press Club a military man, Milton Torres, that was ordered to shoot down a UFO. And his name came out only because the British Ministry of Defense, is declassifying documents. And Milton Torres, who's an American, ex-American serviceman who lives in Florida, was mentioned in these declassified documents, and he was freed from an incredibly big secret. He could admit that he was asked to shoot down a UFO.
Milton Torres kept that secret very, very tightly. But once his name was out there in those documents that were released, as you say, he was free to talk about it, and he's got a very amazing story. And he's so matter-of-fact in the way he talks about it. And one of the things that struck me, I saw him on television talking about it. One of the things that struck me was when he talked about the size of this thing, and he just said it matter-of-factly, He said it was enormous, and it was very easy to lock on with the radar because it was just enormous. And he said it just matter-of-factly, and like you would expect a fighter pilot to speak.
Absolutely. But you know what's sad, Kevin, and I'm going to tell you this. I interviewed Milton Torres, and I'm going to put the interview on my website soon. And at the very end, I said, how do you feel about, being able to talk about it now? And he started to cry, and he said, it's a huge weight that's been lifted off my shoulders. He said, but the sad part about it, he said, my dad died 2 years ago, and I wanted to tell him, and I couldn't.
Yeah. All right. Now, in talking about exopolitics, I've had Dr. Weber. I refer to him as Dr. Weber because he has a Juris Doctorate degree. There are people who say that's not a real doctorate degree, and I say, well, all right, do you have one? If you don't have one, you couldn't get one. It must be. I think it is a real doctorate degree. But I've had Dr. Weber on, and I know you know who I'm talking about.
Alfred Weber. He's a lawyer. I haven't seen doctor in front of his name.
Well, to
Dr.
be a lawyer, you have a to be a doctor. To be a lawyer, you have to have a Juris Doctorate degree.
Right.
And he's got one, so I refer to him as doctor.
Yeah, he is. He's a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, but the last time I had him on the show, we were talking about one of the aspects of exopolitics is, and I used a term I don't think he, in fact, I know he said he had not heard before then, and I think he's using it now, and that's a good thing, exoeconomics. Because once you open up relations with another nation, if you open up relations with another civilization somewhere, one of the natural things that always happens once diplomatic relations are established is there begins to be trading between the two. And one's economics affects the others. And so we were talking about this whole field of exoeconomics And, you know, the possibility that their technology, once we begin to have access to their technology, could really upset the apple cart in our economy here. Well, when I said that, we had an economy that was buzzing along. People were making money, companies were growing, things were good. And right now, I don't think you could upset this economy much more.
Well, you know, it's really sad. You're absolutely right. And I think, though, that, and I don't know how you feel about this, Kevin, but I think we already have some of this technology, that some of this exchange has already gone on. It's just not visible to the general public. Because I really do believe what Colonel Corso told me, and there's so much coming out now, too, that we have had alien technology, back-engineered alien technology, and some of it, if you want to go into even the deep space platform and all that other kind of advanced technology, is not in the public sector yet, because it deals with free energy, and that opens up a whole Pandora's box.
All right, now you've been working in this field of, well, I guess since 1979 you've been dealing pretty much focused on UFOs, extraterrestrial things. How close do you think we are to having free energy dumped in our laps in the public?
Well, I don't know. I really can't answer that. I think that we'll see it in our lifetime, and I think we'll have disclosure in our lifetime, and I think things are going to go kind of upside down in our lifetime. I only see disclosure happening when some of the, you know, in-place structures start to change or morph a little bit, because disclosure couldn't happen with the kind of old order that we were living in. And you, as you said, our economy is changing, and I don't know if you've talked about it on your show, but as far as religious structures, you know that the Vatican, in its official newspaper, came out last May 13th saying that, and it was the head astronomer for the Vatican that said that E.T. was our brother and sister. And they said that it is not against religion to believe in it. And then the third thing that was in that newspaper article, Kevin, was that Christ did not need to die for these E.T. or these people because they were not born with original sin. Well, when I read that and heard that, I thought that modern new doctrine was being put into place, and that the church and economy and maybe our politics is changing for something in the future that they know about that we don't know about yet.
Well, I thought the same thing. But let me tell you, you know, Paul Harvey used to say the rest of the story. 2 years ago, I published a book, Gods in the Garden. Last month, I did a seminar where I taught what's in that book, and what's in that book is what does Genesis actually say. It's not a religious seminar. It's not a religious book. It just looks at Genesis as a document. What does it actually say? When I published the book, I got all kinds of email from really, really angry Christians from, you know, all different denominations. I got three emails from preachers telling me I ought to just go ahead and die and go on to hell where I belong. And I was called the Antichrist. I was called the devil's deputy, the spawn of Satan. I got all of those emails, and I've saved them. And when I did the seminar, I expected I would get the same sort of response. You know what has happened in 2 years? I'm getting emails from people who have gotten the seminar on DVD, or they saw it in person. We televised it, and sort of a pay-per-view thing. And I'm getting emails that are exactly 180 degrees the other direction from people saying, you know, now this makes sense. Where 2 years ago, I was getting really hostile email. Now I'm getting really supportive email. There's been a big shift in the way masses of people are thinking about the cosmos.
And there's also been a lot of disillusionment for these people who expected, you know, the Earth to go a certain way or our leaders to go a certain way or whatever. So you've got a disillusioned society that's looking at, and I'm hoping it's always going to be a spiritual solution, to what the real truth is. I mean, the real truth is, folks, we're not part of this planet. We're part of a cosmos. And like Ed Mitchell said, we better get with it as far as being able to communicate with whatever's out there, because we're part of that, and we're going to need to get off this planet eventually and go into the stars, and we're going to, and hopefully we'll be welcome out there.
Well, if we don't lay the proper groundwork on the front end of this, we will not be welcome out there. And we have to lay the proper groundwork. You know, I'm struck by the, at least what appears to me to be the parallels between stories that I've heard of explorers and missionaries who go into really primitive jungle areas and are making first contact with a tribe in those areas. And, of course, there aren't too many of those left. But you read those stories, and, you know, some of these missionaries, some of these explorers were met with arrows, blowguns, death, and, you know, some barely escaped with their lives. Some of them, however, were met with you know, great welcome. And as you read the stories, you wonder if there was something in the approach, something in the way they presented themselves that made the difference in the response they got from those tribes. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Paula Harris. Paula, you mentioned Philip Corso earlier, and you and he were friends, very close friends, and you got to know him pretty well, and you said something earlier. You said that you believe that what he was saying was the truth. Now, you also have written about a connection between Italy, the Vatican, and Colonel Corso. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about that? What's that all about?
Well, I don't, you know, I've written about the Vatican's disclosure with Monsignor Balducci, mm-hmm. but in Corso's book, he wrote about his talking to the Pope. I haven't written about that.
Okay.
He basically, during World War II, he was the head of intelligence, and he operated in Rome, and he said about a couple of thousand Jews escape on a boat, and he talked to the Pope then was Pope Montini, and he talked about his role in history, his role during World War II, which is not the UFO role.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, his role in history was 1944. He was stationed in Rome as the head of intelligence, and I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Well, that was it. I thought you had written about that. I was mistaken, but I think people need to know that there are other dimensions to all of these folks, you included, Philip Corso included, that we come into contact with because of their UFO research or their involvement in some way in UFOs. And because that's the way we come into contact with them, we often don't realize that there are many other dimensions to these people. And Philip Corso had some greatness about him that people need to know. And that's what I wanted you to talk about.
I could talk about that easy because I think for me, the 50th anniversary of the Roswell crash was very important, Kevin. It was that when that book was released the day after Roswell, and even though there are some, some mistakes that were put in there, the person that Ghost wrote that book with, Philip Corso, was Bill Burns. And, there are some, inaccuracies. In America, though, because of one or two inaccuracies about Roswell, often they write off the whole entire story. And that should never happen because Colonel Corso was very courageous in telling this story. His main motivation were his three grandsons. He was very clear about that. He said the deal was, he said that the last one left alive that had worked in Foreign Technology Division of the Pentagon, which he did work in, the last one alive after Trudeau died, was supposed to tell the truth. And so Colonel Corso was the one, last one living of that group. And so he did what he was supposed to do, and he never made any money off that book, and he never spoke very much in the United States. So that when he came to Italy, we translated the book. He told us a great deal, including he brought with him the autopsies of the bodies. There were bodies, and they were, extraterrestrial biological entities. They were like little clones. And this is all information which completely changed our view of ufology forever, because we had real information now that showed that not only was there a Roswell crash, but whatever was inside was of interest to, the military.
All right. Now, you say he brought information including the autopsies of the bodies. Now, did those were those just reports, or did they also contain some photographs?
No, there were no photographs. What they were notes. Reports that had been done on the different parts of the body and what the skin was like, and the fact they had no alimentary canal, they had no sex organs, they had one organ that functioned as a heart, that the eye had a light collector lid on it. In other words, what I thought was a big black eye was a light collector that was peeled off. I had asked Colonel Corso about the Santilli alien autopsy, mm-hmm. because that film was just all over the place in Europe at the time and here, and he said if it wasn't real, it certainly was a good imitation of what the body, autopsy was like.
And one of the interesting things, I've seen a video of him talking about this, and one of the interesting things about those eyes, it's like they had built-in night vision.
That's what it was. He said that he had that covering, and he said that he had it as part of the artifacts that were given him by Trudeau, and he said he walked up and down the hallways near his office in the Pentagon, and he could see at night. I know from having heard your show that night screening, a night screening binoculars that Ed Grimsley uses helps you see a whole other dimension of what's in the sky.
It certainly does.
I think that, people that say they need to see to believe, if they look in another spectrum or the ultraviolet or another spectrum with night screening devices and these high-powered night screening binoculars, they're going to see what's out there.
The really amazing thing to me, Paula, the first time I looked through them was you look at the sky and you see whatever stars are out there, And, of course, a lot of what you see are not stars. They are galaxies. But you see the twinkles in the sky. And then you put these night vision binoculars to your eyes and look at the same sky, and you will see at least a third more than you can see with the naked eye. The sky just fills up with these things, with stars and galaxies that you cannot see with the naked eye. And you're suddenly aware that there is a whole lot more there than you thought was there. And it's just amazing. As you say, you're looking into almost like looking into another spectrum. And I guess you are. I guess that is the case. All right, now, you've been researching and writing about UFOs and extraterrestrials since, I guess, 1979, right?
Since I worked with Alan Hynek, yeah. I worked with Alan Hynek, the astronomer, you know, the mm-hmm. gentleman that was a consultant to Spielberg in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And I worked with him for 6 years, so he was a scientist, so it was great. I was working with a scientist. I knew it was real.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's 30 years now. It's 30 years now that I've been working in this field, and of course, I'm ready for any kind of disclosure anybody wants to do at this point, any government of any nation. I think that most nations have released their UFO files. I mean, Denmark did it, Canada did it, Brazil did it, England did it. I think they're all getting in line, and I'm waiting for us to get real and do some serious research here, because we got to get ready for the future.
All right, you were at the X conference. Now, we've heard on this show a report from someone who either was at the X conference or who was reading about it or saw this on YouTube or something. But we heard this report that Dr. Greer, Stephen Greer, basically said Stephen Bassett said that the Paradigm Research Group was giving President Obama the first 100 days plus 30 days grace period to make disclosure. And if he didn't do it, they were going to start releasing their information. Were you there? You were there.
Yeah,
did you hear that said?
That at the Washington Press Club. Yeah, I heard him say that, but I think there is no secret information. We had two military witnesses there at the X conference. The one was Milton Torres, and he's very viable. And the second one was a Major Kirkland, who was present at the Holland landing of President Eisenhower in 1954. And it was amazing because he was there. He was a serviceman. The president landed. He heard all the talk about the UFO, about the UFO landing on the tarmac. And he came forth, too, with his testimony. And you know, little by little, military people that were alive in the 50s and 60s that know, you know, some of these secrets are coming forth. But Kevin, I don't think we have any information. I don't think Stephen has any information that is not in the public domain that, you know, is going to make a difference. I don't think any government is going to announce this like that. I don't think it works like that. The United States government, if they went to make an announcement of this type, they'd have to go backwards and talk about all the inaccuracies and the lies and everything that happened way before. The first thing they'd have to do is stop saying that Roswell was crash test dummies in a Mogul balloon. So, you know, I don't think it's going to happen like that. That's not the way this is going to happen.
How do you perceive that it will happen?
Well, I think it could happen any one of two ways. I think that there could be some formal landing in some other country, not this one, but some other country, and then that country and its military will talk about it. Or I think that you could have a mass sighting like we did over O'Hare Airport. Do you remember?
Yeah.
In November of 2007, we had a sighting of a UFO over the United Airlines terminal that everybody saw that was present there, and even the pilots that were present. So, and I mean, if we had like four UFOs over four major airports at the time, we'd have a national security risk. And I think that looking at it under national security problem, or if a UFO threatens an airliner, you know, not threatens, but is in the path of an airliner because they haven't done anything major yet, then I think it'll open it up right away. And so I'm hoping we don't get to that point. I'm hoping the people will insist that there be transparency. And I think that Stephen is just a representative of the people. And he's saying, hey, can we handle this right now? But in Paula Harris's opinion, I don't think Obama can do it because he's got too many other issues on his plate. Many, many issues that are important. I don't think he's going to open this one up.
I tend to agree with you on that. You know, there's just way, way too much happening. Now, welcome back. And my guest this evening, Paula Harris. Paula, we I said before we went away for break, I wanted to explore a little bit the subject of Dr. Wolf. Very enigmatic figure. Very controversial figure in the world of UFOs. And you knew him as well, right?
Yeah, I did. I interviewed him three different times by going to his apartment in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. He was a very enigmatic figure. And he told me in those days some things, Kevin, that have come true. And he talked in those days about a deep space platform, about a secret military space program. He said we had already gone into deep space. And guess what? Right after, you know, a couple of years after he died, we hear that Gary McKinnon has found the names of some military astronauts and has hacked into NASA's database, and that we looks like we have a deep space platform of some kind, and Gary McKinnon's being extradited to the United States shows that maybe, just maybe, this is true.
Well, I'll tell you what to me suggests that what McKinnon says he found. It's not that he's being extradited. I think they would do that if whatever he found. But the fact that if you go look at the Justice Department's list of the most serious computer criminals they have ever prosecuted, the most serious was Mitnick. Mitnick did just under 6 years in prison. McKinnon is exposed to a possible 70 years.
Oh, now, Lord.
That, to me, has fish all over it. I mean, that just smells as if, you know, that maybe he did see what he said he saw, and maybe more than he's talked about. So you've got the very worst computer criminal ever prosecuted in the USA, did just under 6 years. He did 5 years and 8 months. Okay? Just under 6 years. And here, McKinnon is exposed to a possible 70 years. So that looks, I mean, you know, but our government has a way of doing this. They do things in a really kind of a dumb way, because the way they do things takes a highlighter pen. It's just like taking a highlighter pen and highlighting everything they are trying to keep you from noticing. And it draws attention to it. If McKinnon was going to be, if they really wanted to just discount what he says he saw, all they have to do is laugh at it and forget it. But by doing what they're doing, it's just like taking a highlighter pen to everything McKinnon says he saw.
You're absolutely right. That is a good point you point out. But it makes sense to me. It would make sense to me that, you know, we would have something in place where we were a lot more advanced than we are now. We're not doing hardly anything now in comparison in space. We're not doing anything. We have not gone back to the moon. We say we're going to Mars. Something is not right here. Something doesn't look right. And, you know, Michael Wolff talked extensively, and his whole name, by the way, is Michael Wolff Cruvant. And he said that the reason he couldn't use his last name was because he was Russian, his family is Russian, and they helped build a piece of the mirror. And he didn't want any repercussions on the Russian part of his family. The interesting part about Michael Wolff that everybody doesn't know about, because his book is very complicated and cannot be found, you have to pay, I think, $300 for it if you go on internet. I mean, it's not available to the general public. Is that he is the perfect example of an abduction case who was indoctrinated into the intelligence community and served as, he said, an interface for aliens who are human-looking, because on the cover of his book, he has the alien that he worked with who looks just like a human being, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and he was an interface because of the use of ESP, and that's where the exopolitics comes in, Kevin, because if these cultures are using ESP for communications, and that means thought telepathy for communications, and we in our society are not valuing the use of ESP, because as you know, most kids have a sixth sense or ESP, so shouldn't we be teaching ESP or how to communicate with extrasensory perception or intuition? Shouldn't we be doing that if that's what these people use for communication?
Well, I would think we would. I would think that's exactly what we should do. And if we don't, we're at a disadvantage. Now, you've lived in a lot of different places. You've lived in Italy. You've lived here. I presume you've been to other nations as well. And so have I. And you know what it's like to go somewhere where you don't speak their language. You are at a disadvantage. They can smile at you and say whatever they want, and you'll think they're being your friend. They may be planning your robbery. And, if you don't speak their language, you're at a 100% disadvantage.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is that this use of ESP, and a lot of contactees will tell you that after they've had contact, that their heightened sixth sense is really is very evident. They'll say that, you know, they can tell when the telephone's going to ring, or they know things intuitively. A lot of them are downloaded formulas. I mean, this ESP that's so very normal for the human race, this intuition, is something that's valued in the Eastern cultures in the world. I mean, Eastern, like in India and so forth, mm-hmm. and in our Native American cultures where they think all of this is perfectly normal, but it's not valued in our very scientific, you know, Newtonian Cartesian thinking. So, you know, you have to see it to believe it kind of thing. You know, we don't use it, but it's there, and it's, you know, it's put into the occult kind of category, where it's perfectly normal. If the military was using remote viewing, which is a type of sixth sense ESP for psychic spying, and it's okay for them, why can't we use or develop that sense of ESP or remote viewing? Because if we develop it, we as human beings are a little bit more evolved to make some kind of contact with some other beings that are using it for language.
Yes, and I think all of us have that ability. I don't think of myself as being psychic, and yet, you know, I'm 8,000 miles from my family. If there's something wrong with something is wrong with my wife or with one of my little boys, I sense it, I feel it before I get the telephone call. And, you know, I think all of us have that native. Welcome back. My guest is Paula Harris. Paula, when we went away, you were just beginning to tell us about your books being interviews.
Yeah, no, and one of the interviews that I did in Connecting the Dots was Ingo Swann, and I don't know if you know his book Penetration. I don't know if you've ever read it.
Mm-hmm.
But he basically was one of the teachers of these psychic spies in the 70s, and is very much into remote viewing, and I had interviewed him in Austin, Texas, and had gone up to him and said, you know, Ingo, you said that you remote viewed, you know, non-human intelligence on the dark side of the moon. And he turned around to me and he said, yeah, I also on the light side. And then he also said to me, well, you know, ESP is in our hard drive when we're born, but society has to take it out of us. It's a program, you know, like in a computer. Mm-hmm. And with our conditioning, with schooling and everything, it's taken out of our hard drive. Well, that coming from Ingo Swann, Kevin, is a very important statement.
It is indeed. And I think it's quite evident. Children, before they can speak language, before they can speak our language, children sense whether a person is a friend or a foe. And they respond that way. And, you know, it's an amazing ability they've got. And somewhere along the way, we make sure they lose it. How do we do that?
Well, it's all tied up, I think, a little bit, too, with our religious sense. You know, it's you know, tied to the occult and the unknown and, you know, that part of the field that humanity doesn't understand. And so what we don't understand, we ridicule, or some kind of censorship comes into place. And that's too bad. Or it's really too bad. It's really sad, because then all these people later on in their lives are taking these classes to do remote viewing. I mean, in their 40s and 50s, they're all remote viewing when they all had it when they were little. I think we humans have to really evolve a lot more before we meet our cosmic cousins.
I don't disagree at all. All right, what I'd like to do is open up the telephone line and ask our audience to join in the discussion. And, folks, the telephone number is 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580. Now, if you are in the United States or Canada, please use that telephone number or use our toll-free number. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the United States or you're outside of Canada, you can use our flash message feature, and you do that by going over to the website, kevinsmithshow.com. Once you get over to the website, just scroll down, and you will see a link that says flash message. All right, and you can use that. We call it a flash message because when it comes in, when you hit submit and it comes in, I have a notice that flashes on my monitor over here. So We call it a flash message. All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario. Hello, Paula.
Hi, hello.
Hello, Paula, we were talking about Ingo Swann and talking about human ESP and whatnot. I recently saw a seminar with Dr. Lloyd Pye, who suggests that our ESP may have been, quote-unquote, turned off thousands of years ago when the Anunnaki came here and made us, you know, pretty much made us, you know, their servants or their miners and whatnot, and they only gave us enough sentience so we could be able to follow orders. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, this is only my opinion. I don't think that's the case because too many people have this sixth sense, and if we're able to learn it by you know, training psychic spies, and from what I understand, they were ordinary people off the street, and they're in the International Remote Viewing Conference. You have all these people that are doing remote viewing, because I went there and I did do some interviews there. Not only are they doing remote viewing, I'm going to add another thing. They were bending spoons. And I couldn't believe I was watching this. And it was no trick. We have these powers that are still there. And I don't think that all of us were made by Anunnaki. If that's the case, I think that if we were seated on this planet, if there were some kind of hybridization, it was many cosmic cultures. It wasn't just one, because I think that's what's out there that's watching us are many cosmic cultures. So that's just my opinion, and thank you so much. I love Canada. My mother is from Stratford, Ontario, and I wanted to tell you that.
Wow. Yeah, I'm starting to think that perhaps over the last 60 years, if not, I think our psi abilities have been quote-unquote turned on. I think especially since the UFO wave started picking up in the 1940s, I think our psychic abilities may have been turned on, perhaps to help us in the shift coming in 2012.
Yeah, I think we have the choice of whether to turn it off on or not. I think if you have that, you've turned it on, and other people are too scared and they decide not to. I think we have free will on this planet and we have a choice, so I think it's good if we can turn it on. At least we can see who's telling the truth.
Kevin, thank you for the call. Interesting question. And, you know, I think that's true. I think the whole thing about, you know, many different cultures coming here makes a lot of sense. Instead of just one, many of them coming here makes more sense. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Well, maybe if I push the right button. Hang on. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for having Paul on. I saw Paul a couple of years ago at the UFO World Congress. I just wanted to add a little something about ESP and everything, since that's basically the area that I work in, since I'm a healer and everything. You're very right. We all do have it, but it's like learning whether or not to use it, being aware of it, number one, and number two, being aware of it, learning to use it, just like learning to drive a car or anything like that. And number three, actually getting activated by different types of initiations and things like that. So it's, and believe it or not, I think it's really imperative that mankind as a whole tries to tap back into that, because that's where we're really meant to be. We're not really meant to experience a lot of the physical stuff that we are experiencing. We're, in order to be able to do better, in order to be able to, I don't want to say really compete, but as Paul was saying, to get to know our star brothers and sisters, we have to be able to up the ampage, as I call it, in our psychic abilities, so that we can communicate and we can understand what's going on.
What do you think, Paula?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's part of the exopolitics, because if there are extraterrestrial visitations, then it's going to change society. That's one of the implications for changing our society. I mean, the change in communication, the ability to download information. I mean, a lot of people download information. A lot of, you know, scientists are telling me that they've gotten these ideas out of God knows where. And it's really interesting. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Okay, Debbie,
okay,
thanks for the call.
What?
Yeah. Downloads. I know a scientist who has experienced such a thing, and he's told about it right here on this show. And he is now one of the leading scientists in what we would, I think, what we would term as the new green energy movement. Not the political movement, but the actual scientific movement. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hello.
Your first name and from where are you calling?
My name is Ron. I'm calling from New Jersey.
Yeah, Ron.
I'm Michael Wolff's brother.
Okay.
Is it possible for you to speak louder?
No. We've got you turned up as loud as we can get it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to make everything as quiet as possible here. If there's anything, I don't have your show on. From what I understand, there's Paola Harris is on, and she was saying something to the effect that he was a perfect example of an abduction case.
Okay.
And the reality is that he was never abducted.
Okay.
Well, that's funny, because I have a DVD from you that said that he when he was small, he was contacted, and he had a very traumatic thing happen to him, and you saw the UFO. That's what
that's
the DVD
right,
you sent
abducted.
Me, Ron, says.
He wasn't abducted, Paula.
He was contacted.
He and I were both in the backyard. We witnessed one go by.
Yeah.
Approximately half a mile away. There was absolutely no
And then
no
he disappeared. And you said he disappeared into the and you found him somewhere
into,
in the house.
He ran into the basement of the house.
Right.
He hid in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly. But he was had contact. Something happened to
does
him.
Does that mean that, well, then I guess that means I had contact also. Is that
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely. Possibly.
Okay, we both saw it. But that's
right.
The extent of it. But he wasn't abducted.
I
think it's...
You know, Ron, this is not the place, I think, to have the whole entire discussion on Michael. However,
we can get into other factors if you like.
Well,
but
the thing
I,
is
I,
that
I
Jim Courant did the story before me. Jim Courant, who
say
is
again?
A Jim Courant, who is a pilot in a commercial airlines, did the story before I did it.
Yes.
And he did an excellent job researching Michael.
Uh-huh.
Before I did it.
Well, have you seen the DVD with me being questioned by Charles Wright?
Absolutely.
You saw that.
I do not agree with a lot of the things you said, but I saw it.
Well, you know that it's on record that he was so totally a mental case.
Yes, Ron, but he also worked in Italy in intelligence because we had an intelligence man come into our offices in Italy and tell us that he had been working for them, and that man wasn't lying.
That's untrue. I'm sorry.
Well, the man was not lying. He told us that when we translated his book. So we have the name of the man, and we have the intelligence agency that he was working for, so Michael... You know, the man was not lying. He told us when we were translating his book this. So I don't think he'd walk into our offices in Italy and say this.
Excuse me. I believe that you believe these things, but I know what occurred in Michael's life from day one.
Ron, okay. It is Ron, right?
Yes.
Okay, Ron. There is no one... I'm not taking sides in this, but you just made a statement that I want to put some clarity to. There is absolutely no one who knows everything that I have been involved in my life There is no one who knows everything you've been involved in, and there's no possibility that you know everything that Michael was involved in.
Well, I would say just about everything. Just about.
You know, my family, Ron, my family is aware that I worked for international police. They are aware of what countries I was in. They are not aware of what my tasks were. They are not aware of what my involvements were. And they can't be.
Well, let me say something to you. Outside of Michael dropping out of college and getting funded by my family to go to Italy to try to get into a Fellini movie, and coming back broke, they had to pay for him to come back. Outside of that, he never left either New Jersey or Hartford, Connecticut.
You're sure?
Never left those two states.
You're sure?
I'm positive.
Well, I can't dispute you on that, but I will tell you.
I know, and I just want to make the fact clear.
Yeah, but I will tell you, there's no possibility that you know everything that Michael involved
in. I don't know everything, but I know there was a lot of fudging and a lot of making documents and stuff that he got involved in. You know, he did everything that he could to make his lies seem palatable so that people would just swallow it. And I'm sorry, but I think there's a great number of people that have accepted him as a valid source for any information at all. He's just gleaned everything that he could from books, movies, and everything else he could get his hands on. But he was mentally, he was very, very sharp. But he was a sick boy.
Well, you know, that can be said of a lot of people with high intellect.
That's true. But nonetheless, he was a pathological liar all of his life.
Would you think that someone who is a pathological liar, I'll stipulate to that. I don't know Michael.
Yeah.
I never met him. I'll stipulate to that. But would you think that might be an asset for someone working in intelligence?
No. I really don't think so. I think a person has to know when he's lying, has to be able to make the separation.
Well, a pathological liar knows when he's lying. He just doesn't care.
Say again?
A pathological liar knows when he's lying. He just doesn't care.
Well, it makes for a better liar.
People who work in intelligence have to be able to tell, they call them cover stories, and they have to be able to tell
them
convincingly. And they have
to. I
know
that. I was in the service. I know a certain amount of things.
Yeah. Well, I would say it would be an asset.
Well, it would be, but in his case, it didn't exist.
Okay. Well, I can't dispute you because I can't dispute what you're saying because I didn't know him.
He was never in service in any way.
Nor was I.
Well, unfortunately, I had a CIA gentleman tell me Matt Michael was working there, and he verified it for me. And then when we were in Italy, we did have a visit where we translated the book, Kevin. So these are two people are either lying to us, or I don't know why they came to our offices. They didn't want Michael's stuff to come out.
Yeah, well, Ron, we have to move along because we have other callers. But I want to thank you for calling. Very interesting. I like controversy. But I would have to say that not only from Paula Harris, but from some other sources, I have heard things that tell me that at least the part about having worked in intelligence seems to me to be verified. And you know, I know about some things that I can't talk about with me. And if I were to tell you those things, you would say, well, there's no proof. And you're right. There is no proof that I can put out in public. Nonetheless, it's true. And if I were to tell you, you know, you would say, oh, that's just too fantastic. It can't be true. It is true. But there's no way I could prove it to you unless some people who were working with me came along and said, you know what, he did that. And, you know, that's kind of what we've got with Michael Wolff. Ron, thanks for the call. And let's go to, let's see, I'm trying to bring this next call up. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington State.
Hi, Ryan.
Boy, quite the controversial show tonight. I like those, too.
Yeah, it's fun.
One thing that I've learned in this field is that you can't believe somebody just on word of mouth. You got, I'm learning that... you got to have show me proof. You know, there's a lot of liars, a lot of stories that people tell. Many of them are without any proof. But I wanted to ask Paula about something that I was paying attention to when it comes to the X conference. Alfred Weber revealed at the X conference two new sources that he obtained contact with from what he says was the Vatican or somebody that was associated with the UN. And we've been going back and forth about this alleged UN meeting that supposedly happened in January of 2008.
February 12th.
And we understand there was a source, et cetera. But Alfred Weber, you know, I have a lot of respect for him, and he seems like a very intelligent person. And he talked about, I wonder if Paul, if you know about if you can remember who, you don't have to say who they were, but he had a couple of people from the Vatican that kind of confirmed to him that this kind of story that actually happened. Do you remember what he was talking about?
No, what Alfred Weber is saying is that he got a letter from the Vatican saying that Father Funes, who is, you know, the chief astronomer, was only speaking on his own behalf. And I think that was the Vatican's, if he did get a letter, it was damage control, because we have the newspaper, the official Vatican newspaper, that has those words from Father Funes, and he is not speaking just on his own behalf. I mean, you don't put it in the official Vatican newspaper. You might put it in the National Enquirer if he's speaking on his own behalf. But no, that was official Vatican newspaper that talked about ETs, and guess when they did it? They did it on May 13th. The Fatima apparition. The day that they celebrate the Madonna Fatima. And if you remember that apparition, the sun came out of the sky and did a twirling motion and went back in the sky. And a lot of books have been written about that miracle not being any sun at all, but a huge disc. And that the Vatican knows more about UFOs than it's letting on. So it's very interesting. They're the ones that did it. They're the ones that put it out. It wasn't necessary for them to do that. So as a journalist, I'm wondering what in the world and why they would do such a thing. So, and as far as the UN initiative, I don't know anything about that. Alfred has his sources, and I don't know anything about that, but I know that if we can get one nation to put it, one nation would put a resolution there, we could do some serious research in this field. But what, it has to be a nation that has nothing to lose.
Yeah. Really has nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Paula Harris. Paula, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence because the break was taking over, so the floor is yours.
No, basically, you know, he's very controversial. He always will be. I feel really, really bad because, in a way, he was a very gentle soul, a very wonderful person. And if it hadn't been when we were translating his book that we had this visitation, and if I hadn't called somebody who was working in intelligence and asked about Michael, I probably would have been on the fence also. But these people confirmed that he had worked in intelligence, and then Jim Courant had told me that he had talked to Ron, and Ron had given him another story when he went to interview Michael. He said he changed his story after Michael died, and you know, I'm wondering whether it's just that Michael, you know, it's better for everybody to stay away from that case. I'm wondering why, because he was such a very interesting situation, a very, very sweet and you know, kind person. So I don't, you know, we had it verified to us. Jim Courant did some research before he even did the story verified it. So I don't know, you know, I feel very bad that his memory is one of those words, because those words are not like the memory of a family member, you know, leaving a memory like that of a family member. So I feel kind of bad about it.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
How are you? Interesting show tonight.
Well, thank you. They all are.
Hey, hello, Paul. I just wanted to say that Ron that just called in earlier, I do know him. I got that same DVD that Paula received, and it was sent to me by my friend and our friend, Dick Criswell. And so I checked it out, and I got to know Ron. He's really a nice guy, but he is very insistent on the fact that his brother did not do the things that he says that he did. So,
but you know, Dick Criswell, could you tell us something about Dick Criswell? Because he knew Michael very well.
Yes, I know Dick very well. I served on the same committee that he served on. And Dick is still recovering from his heart operation that he had last September. And I called this evening, and he was asleep. So, but he is recovering well, and they're still working on getting him the necessary nursing assistance at home and everything.
But he supports the Michael Wolff story, and he went on Coast to Coast, I think it is, and said that he was present when Michael briefed President Clinton and Al Gore. Dick Criswell went on Coast to Coast and said that.
Yes, I know that he says that. He actually visited Michael in Connecticut, and I never had that opportunity. So Dick knows a lot more, or has a lot more information about Michael than I do.
Yeah, he supports that story 100%, and I guess, you know, he got hold of me, too, and verified a lot of parts of that story. So it's really weird we all got these DVDs. It's like, I'm thinking, what's this all about, you know? We all got the DVDs calling Michael all these names, and saying that he was a liar, so, I mean, I don't know anymore. It's such a confusion.
Well, I know that when Dick got it, he was infuriated by the fact that his brother was saying that this was all a lie. And so he sent me the DVD, and being impartial here, I was just trying to get to the bottom of the story, so I called his brother. And I told him who I was, and over the months that followed, that we developed sort of a relationship, and I've stayed impartial. Ron knows how I feel about this.
Okay, well, see, I knew Michael. You didn't know him. And
I knew Michael. Committee.
Yeah, and I knew Michael, and I don't think Michael was lying. I don't think
right.
I think he had a vivid imagination. I think he did work in the entertainment field, but I think that was part of his undercover work. I mean, he knew too much about what was going on. He named places in Italy. He named places he had been. He named situations I couldn't believe he knew about. So I don't think that that it was 100% deception. But, you know, it's a family situation. What can you do? It's a family situation.
Yeah, there's a lot of hard feelings there that were acquired over the his youth growing up. I will admit
right.
that. But I did know Michael. I knew him as part of the AlphaCom team. And,
right.
But I never got to meet him face-to-face.
Were you on the AlphaCom team?
Yes, I was.
Well, that was the team he was working with.
Yes, it was. And I shared a lot of information with him, and he with me. But I never got to go to his house and actually meet him in face, you know, face to face.
Well, he was very sick. And when I went
yes,
there,
I
had to be very careful. He was very sick, and his family members were not there when he was sick. And he was very, very sick. He almost died a couple of times. So it was... he was very lonely. He was a very lonely person and talked to everybody, including some very powerful people, because when I was in his apartment, I knew who was on the other end of the phone. And so, you know, he's a big mystery. As Kevin said, he is an enigma. He's a big mystery. But I did know him very well.
Mike, I'm going to have to run to the next call, but I thank you for the call. And, you know... That's sort of, Paula, what I was thinking of when I said to Ron, well, I know about some things that, you know, I really can't talk about, but they confirmed to me that he is who he said he was. And Mike, that just talked with you, is one of those items that came to my mind at that time. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Well, hang on a second. It might be better if I did that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Ryan again. I got cut off. I just wanted to make one more comment.
Yeah, you get cut off after 3 minutes.
I just want to make one more comment. I don't think that human beings are ready to go into space yet. It just seems like there's too many problems that we've got to work out ourselves here on this planet before we can start moving outward. I mean, just... The amount of things that I see on a day-to-day basis that people do. What do you think about that, Paula?
Isn't that sad, though? Isn't that sad? Here are some, cultures visiting us in craft, around our airplanes, in our airspace, worried about whether we're going to use nuclear, and we aren't ready. We aren't ready to really go out there because we've got to deal with our things. I think you're absolutely right, and it's sad.
It is indeed. We should by now, honest to goodness, we should be better people. We don't seem to have caught hold of that idea much. All right, the telephone number is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. Or toll free, 888-223-4599. If you live outside of Canada and outside the USA, you can use the flash message feature on our website. And it just so happens that we have a number of flash messages. So let me start getting through some of those. And let's go first to Germany. This is from Don in Germany. Hi, Kevin. I thought you might be interested in knowing I worked for the UN also in Bosnia mainly, later Kosovo, and other places. A good friend of mine was, and he mentions a name, of the International Police, I think of Arizona. I listen to your show regularly. Keep up the good work. Okay. Thank you for that. And actually, I remember Don, I think. All right. This one is from the United States. We don't read those on the air. Australia, Andrew writes, video is not working again tonight. Yeah, it is. but maybe not where you are, Andrew. From the United States. Bob in Australia. Paula, do you really think, in all honesty, the human race is ready for full ET contact? Well, we were just talking about that, but why don't you address that, Paula?
Well, you know, I'd like to believe that some of us are. I mean, some of us are. You know, the people that I work with and a lot of the people in Europe, because I'm in Europe a lot, you know, in Switzerland, France, and I will be in Barcelona, Spain, a major exopolitics conference in July. It's opening up all of exopolitics, this whole issue, and Stephen Greer and Robert Dean will be there, and Nick Pope will be there. If you talk to Robert Dean, he will say that we are. But the general public has so many worries. The general public probably doesn't want to take the responsibility yet to be part of that. You know, it does kind of change your life. And there's a lot of people that just want to watch a game, Kevin. They just don't want to go and you know, have a couple of beers, watch a game, and not worry about anything else. And those people shouldn't be made to do anything. I mean, they don't want to know. They shouldn't have to be, you know, part of this, but there are a lot of people that would like to.
All right. Also from Australia, thanks for being on the show again, Paula. You stated that the world needs a super UN type of entity formed for contact whenever ET contact is fully established. Who would be the best personalities to run and administrate this, as I doubt the world's politicians would ever have humanity's best interest at heart? Politicians rarely tell the truth to the masses and almost always have a different agenda than the mainstream citizens.
What a wonderful question, Kevin. That is a wonderful question.
It is.
It is. Whoever asked that question really went to the heart of the matter. Well, you know, the super UN was suggested by Oppenheimer and Einstein in a letter called Relationships with Celestial...
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Paula Harris. Paula, you were talking about the books that are available for people to read and get the information they need.
Yeah, in my first book, Connecting the Dots, I have a list of 32 books. And so I think people should, if they're interested in it, study it like you would any sociological or historical course.
You know, I get criticized sometimes. Anybody in dealing with UFOs is going to get some criticism. I get criticized sometimes for making the statement that the debate over whether UFOs are real is over.
It's over.
It's put a fork in it. It's done. It's over.
Yes, you talked to Milton Torres, who was ordered to shoot at one, and it's over.
Absolutely, and you have official documentation of that in the Ministry of Defense files that were released in the UK.
Not just UK, in France, in Denmark, in Brazil, in all the other countries, and in Canada. Canada is really one of the forerunners. I'm very close friends with the ex-Minister of Defense in Canada, Paul Hellyer, and he also is very, very avid about disclosure.
What do you think? Is disclosure going to happen in Canada before it happens here in the USA?
No, I'll say the same thing that Stephen Bassett said. I think it's going to come out of France.
Well, France has released their UFO files on the Internet. But you think
they've also written the Cometa Report. The Cometa Report is a report done by military. And I think that France, there's a group of people that are very, very much interested in contact.
have you heard this story? I think it's Uzbekistan. I think that's where it was. It's either Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan that is building a UFO landing area and embassy. Have you heard about that?
No, but that isn't unusual because I think that the when Grant Cameron was talking, Canada had done the same thing during the time of Wilbur Smith. The whole Wilbur Smith story, he was a physicist in Canada, and there's a whole story around that and contact that had happened up there. So it's not unusual. I mean, I think that close encounters probably really did happen.
Okay, now, we don't have much time, but I want to, that opens up a can of worms here. Because in the movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the end of that movie shows an exchange where you had humans getting on the spaceship to fly away to the aliens' planet, and you had some aliens that got off of the spaceship and sort of an exchange. Now, there's a story out there, Project Serpo. Lots of people have said that's pure nonsense. I've had people who have said that, and I'm talking about people who would be in a position, you would think, to know, who have said, yes, it happened, but not quite like what was in the movie, and It was not called Serpo. So what do you know about that?
Well, you know, in the whole history of UFO research and all of it, Kevin, there's disinformation shoved in with information. In the truth, there's a bunch of lies, and that's what the problem is. What do I think? I think there are pieces of Project Serpo story that could be real. And I think that, and if you remember Close Encounters, the last part, it was a Frenchman. It was Jacques Vallée's, counterpart, Francois Truffaut, that met the beings, if you remember that,
yeah.
Too. I wanted to bring that up. But anyway, I think that there is probably some truth to all of these lies that's out there.
So you think that that possibly there was an exchange program?
I'm wondering about Close Encounters. I really am. I always have wondered about Close Encounters. I think the Holloman landing is a programmed landing. I really think that something happened in the past where there has been contact. I don't know about a full exchange, but, there, like you said, I've met some people who are in the know who say parts of that are true. But there's a lot of lies in mixed in. So what do? Throw the baby out with the bathwater?
Well, of course, a lot of people would like for us to do that.
Well, that's why it's out there. That's why disinformation is out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It also provides a cover for the future, because what can happen is if there are any rumblings of repercussions once disclosure happens and people are saying you've lied to us, they can point back to these stories and say, well, we put the story out there. It's been out there, but, you didn't believe it.
Well, that's a very good point. I think that's what they'll probably do. They'll say it's out there in the lore, in the UFO mythology. It's out there. We just couldn't tell you because it was national security, but it's been out there. That's why people should really study the books and study information. Read it. Make your own decision. Even about the Michael Wolff story, make your own decision.
Well, even you take someone like Einstein. When you say Michael Wolff, it's a lightning rod, and lots of people divide up on Michael Wolff. But you take someone like Einstein, and you would think, he's not so controversial. Einstein was excessively controversial. There were people who thought he was absolutely nutty. And, of course, I guess there may be some people today who think he was nutty. But I think most people now, having the benefit of all these years to look back on him, most people would not think that Einstein was nutty. But during his life, he was laughed at, he was scoffed, he was opposed. Lectures were given, books were written, all about why Einstein was wrong. But he, as it turns out, he was right. And, you know, I think maybe in years, as years pass, people may be able to look back on Michael Wolff and make a determination with a little bit clearer eyesight than right now.
Oh, I agree. I think history will be the one to decide. But, you know, I believe in educating people, and that's what exopolitics does. I mean, it talks about discussion that's intelligent and essays that are written and looking at all the political implications of this. And it's much more forward than looking at lights in the sky. I think we're way past lights in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lights in the sky are like Christmas decorations. They're pretty to look at. But there's a whole bunch more to know about them and to know about things beyond lights in the sky. Let me say for our listeners, just a reminder that if you go to my website and you look at Paula's picture and click on it, it'll take you to her website. But it's an easy...